Hello, and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. And as always, I am joined today by one of my all-time favorite guests. It's Jonders. How you doing, Jonders?
I'm doing fantastic. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. The podcast train rolls along. My parents have been remodeling our house all summer long. Thankfully, today there is no loud construction work going on in the background, so I was able to get a day podcast recorded instead of a night podcast, which is good because you're a busy man. You have a nightlife now out there in Chicago. How's that all going?
Well, that made me think I was an extra on one of my colleagues at IO's TV shows, like gonna be like web series or whatever, but it was we were filming at this restaurant across the street from where they were doing construction, so it was like, all right, pause, construction's done, go, roll. So it was like we were kind of really like waiting for the, like, I don't know, it was fun. But yeah, what was your question?
How's the nightlife going in Chicago, aka all the busyness that is happening with your life that is turned you into an all-star comedian? You're too big to be playing with the amateur football bloggers anymore. Well, you've moved on to bigger and better things as a famous improv comedian.
I don't think I'm big at all, but I would definitely never be too big. I'll never be too big for you, Eric. So always make time.
Thank you.
You know, I appreciate that. The show's going great. Tuesdays at 10 at IO Theater in Chicago. If you're in Chicago, check it out. Everything's going great. We got extended through August. So originally I asked for 4 weeks. They gave us 8 weeks. We're getting another 4 weeks. Or no, I asked for four. We got nine, getting another four. So that's 13 weeks. That's a big deal at a big comedy theater.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's a pretty good length. So walk me through kind of your preparation for that show. It always kind of fascinates me how these things go because I am not a funny person. It always makes me interested to see kind of how funny people think, and like, because there's a ton of work that goes on behind the scenes. And I don't think people hear a ton about it.
Yeah, well, I have a writing staff of about six people consistently show up to the meetings and are submitting stuff. We do about 10 monologue jokes a week. I'll write maybe 50, 40 monologue jokes a week. We whittle those down to our favorite. It ends up being about seven of my jokes, three of the writing staff's jokes on the monologues. We do a couple sketches every week, and usually those are inspired by something we see in the news that wouldn't be great for a monologue joke. But like a couple weeks ago, there was a gamer girl selling her bath water online to, you know, losers, you know. And we have this guy on the writing staff named Charlie, but he plays a guy named Chuck who lives, there's a window on stage. So he kind of pops his head out and he says things like, oh, the hair is the grass of the head. I don't know. He does it better than I can do it, but he just says weird stuff. So we wrote an entire sketch around him selling his bath water. And then the big reveal at the end, it's like 60% water. There's a hard-boiled egg in there. It's like ketchup and Coke, and like it just looks gross. Usually one sketch is a holdover that we wanted to get perfect, and one sketch is written that week. So there's just a lot going on all the time. And then there's different characters that we introduce during the monologue. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of moving parts every week.
Yeah, it sounds like it takes a lot of time to put together, and like it's pretty time consuming, but that's pretty cool. So the St. Jude's thing, I got a chance to actually donate to that thing. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, man.
But how'd that go? Was there a live stream of that? I was kind of looking for it.
Going to release it later as a podcast, but it went very poorly. Three fans showed up. Usually for the late night show, it's like 75 to 100 people show up. But for whatever reason, Saturday at 7, three people showed up. And then also to add to the problem, there was going to be I asked a lot of improvisers to join me. There was going to be like 7 to 10 people, but at the end, only one showed up on time. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's terrible.
We ended up raising $155 for St. Jude.
I'm sorry that people just completely bailed on like this very important thing to you.
But it was like one of those things where like it went poorly. Like it went as bad as it could have gone, right? But then I went to the bar at the theater, and it was kind of
sick
like this
brag,
moment.
But you're old enough to drink.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's really cool. Alcohol. I had a Sprite and a hot dog. So yeah, no, but it was kind of one of these moments where every like more veteran player there was like, hey man, we've had a show that go that bad. You know what I mean? Like it was kind of like I was in the club now because I had a show go that poorly, and everybody's had a show go that poorly.
Well. Yeah, I guess you move, you learn, and you grow, and you you move on with that kind of thing. I've seen your tweets recently; they're pretty depressing.
Oh yeah, I'm really depressed.
I just wanted to check in on Jonder's psyche and say I appreciate you a lot, man. And you've tweeted a lot about dying alone recently.
Yeah.
And that has been just wonderful to look at. But I just want I want you to know that some kindly girl's gonna come along and be like, oh, Jonders, you're a funny guy and you work hard. And we'll give you a shot.
I went to this comedy show on Saturday because there's this comic in from New York here in Chicago, and I really want her to be on my show this Tuesday. And like, I was like, I want a show that I'm supporting her, whether or not she does my show. Like, I want to go to her one of her shows. So I go to one of her shows, and there's a – so it's fun. I meet her. I'm able to shake her hand, like put a face to the name that I've been in contact with her through social media. And I go to the bar, and it's a $10 minimum on the debit card. I don't carry cash with me ever. I should. But so I think I'm pretty slick. I have a $2 PBR at the beginning of the night, and now that the show's over, they're selling like Planters peanuts. And I go, I'll take $8 worth of peanuts, please. I think I'm pretty funny. They give me the $8. They ring me up. A girl sits next to me, a woman, you know. And I say to her, would you like some peanuts? She says, yes, I would love some peanuts. And I think I'm being pretty smooth. This is like the most smooth I've been with a lady in a long time. And then the guy behind the counter goes, can you read this? And he's like, no, just give me whatever to sign. He's like, no, you have to read the thing. And it says declined on my $10 purchase. And it's like, oh,
that's
my God,
rock bottom.
The nice girl who sat next to me offered to pay for my $2 beer. And then it's also like the guy behind the counter was like, oh, you're too cute to be here alone. Where are your friends? And I go, I don't have any friends. Came here alone, like in front of the woman. Like I'm just doing this thing where I have no money and no friends. But
yeah,
so a lot of women
you
have declared
friends, though.
I didn't have friends there for sure. A lot of women have declared this is hot girl summer. I have declared this is sad boy summer. It's sad boy summer 2019, baby.
Sad boy summer. Yeah, I've been thinking about hot girl summer a lot too recently, and I don't really know. I don't really get it. I think it's
doesn't
you
sad
know,
boy summer that, sound more appealing? And
I don't know. It just sounds
relatable.
Yeah. Sounds like a label. Sounds like a good way to objectify yourself. I thought we were trying to move away from that as a society. And it seems like the pendulum is swung in the other direction. And they're like, I'm looking for hot boys this summer. And I was like, well, I'm definitely not a hot boy. I had a random Twitter troll tell me I was about a 5, which
Five's
is
not
bad.
Five's
I
not
could,
bad.
I mean, I consider myself probably a 6, a 6.5. Solid looking, but nothing to look twice at.
If a Twitter troll told me I was a 5 out of 10, I would take that in stride. I'd be like, all right,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I've had Twitter trolls tell me to kill myself and all kinds of things. A 5 out of 10 is like, all right, cool.
Well, that's
maybe that's even worse because it's like telling somebody that like they're ugly, but to tell somebody that they're like mediocre is very like, oh man, they're probably right. You know, maybe that's worse.
Yeah,
Eric is crying now.
My, well, you know, I thought about it, though. I've been kind of grinding the dating apps this summer. I tried a little bit of Bumble. I went on a Bumble date. It was okay. She didn't really talk at all, and that was a real problem when I had to carry the conversation.
You're
a
podcaster. You should be able to carry the conversation.
I'm pretty good at carrying the conversation, but Occasionally, someone has to ask you a question, and she just did not seem interested, which is weird because it's Bumble, and she, like, DM'd me and was like, hey, we should go on a date. And I was like, sounds great. She also put in the weirdest pizza order I've ever heard in my entire life. Spinach, mushroom, and sausage.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Yeah. Who puts spinach on a pizza and then doesn't put dried tomatoes on it, you know? The two have to go together. You can't have one or the other. You got to have both. You got to go, if you're going to go spinach, you got to kind of go the full Mediterranean route and go spinach, feta, dried tomatoes, you know? You can't just go spinach, Italian sausage, mushroom. If you're going to go Italian sausage, mushroom, and you want a vegetable on there, another vegetable on there, the easy answer is olive. Mushroom, olive, and sausage is delicious.
Did you pay for this pizza?
Yeah, I did. But, right. Well, she offered to pay, but then I was like, no, I never get to be a gentleman. So
one time after an improv show, the team that we opened for, there's a beautiful woman on their team, right? And I go up to the bar, I'm going to talk her up, right? She takes my, and then I get my check while I'm talking her up. I leave a tip and slide it towards the bartender. She grabs it, not the bartender, the woman I'm talking up, grabs it, sees how much I tipped, and goes, yeah, that's good enough. And then decides to continue talking to me as if I didn't leave enough of a tip, she would not have talked to me.
See, I like that. I think I find that attractive. Like, I'm a
it's
big tipper.
It's none of her business how much I tip the bartender.
I'm a big tipper. I don't go to bars.
So am
but
I,
like,
but it's not anybody else's business.
Right. Well, I mean, you're right, but I don't
it's
really
between
know.
Me and the bartender. It's not a group project.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair fact. But my larger overall point was that I've been grinding these dating apps all summer, and I haven't really found anything, but that's okay, because I realized that I'll just focus my life on football for the next, like, 6 months and just become a...
How old are you, Eric?
How old are you, Jotters?
I'm not going to tell you. What I'm going to tell you, though, is to run now. Run now. I see myself in you, Eric, and I'm telling you to run now.
You're somewhere between 26 and 50, and I'm gonna go in the 40 range today.
Don't say that, man. The listener can't see me. They think I'm actually 40.
I mean, no, you're like probably 27, maybe.
That's very
30?
Close. We don't need to get into this. I'm definitely not 30. All right, so then that's all we're gonna get into this. Is that I'm not 30 and I'm not 27. I might be in between. That's all we're gonna say.
Oh, all right. Well, that's good to know. Well, you only got a few years till 30, and then it's all downhill from there, man. According to the world and the way the world works, apparently. But I don't know.
Great conversation we're having.
This
here.
Is a great conversation. I don't know why I went down this rabbit hole. I was here to up Jonders.
Jonders has been thinking about his mortality lately. Let's really grind the gears on that. Let's really screw in the screws.
Listen, I've been thinking about mortality a lot recently as well. I think I've wasted my life. I'm young, but
we're
I think I've wasted my life.
We're 14 minutes into this football podcast,
and we haven't talked about football. Right.
No.
My larger point was I'm just going to focus on football for the next 6 months. Let's talk about football, shall we?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Let's do that.
All right, let's talk about football. And let's talk about the NFC West. So kind of a way I've been doing this is I feel like a good way to kind of break down each division is to create an all-division team with not individual players but position groups outside of quarterback, which is an individual player. And I haven't focused on special teams at all, which is weird. Because this is a kicker news podcast.
I did this wrong when you sent it to me. Okay, I can fix it on the fly, though.
Okay, yeah. So, sorry. Yeah, I might have been less than clear on the Google.
I did, like, an all-star team of, like, all different positions. But, yeah, we can figure it out.
Yeah, no. So, we'll figure it out.
Little tease, my offensive line one is, according to your rules, I did just pick a unit for the offensive line.
Yes. We'll let you go. We'll let you go first, Ben, while you, and then the, so you'll start at quarterback because I'm sure you have a quarterback.
Yeah, it's Russell Wilson. I didn't even write it down. I don't even know. I can't even imagine a world where you would even do devil's advocate and try to say somebody else. Russell Wilson's the guy. I was trying to look at today to see if he's ever been outside of the top 20 in the NFL 100, which is its own thing, and we can debate about the merits of that, blah, 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 blah. But the point is that he has the respect of his peers. He already has a Super Bowl in the bag, two NFC championships in the bag. He hasn't won his MVP yet, but that's going to happen sooner or later. Russell Wilson is the guy forever and always. Russell Wilson.
I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that 100%. You're right. I can't play devil's advocate. There's really no one. This division has some decent quarterbacks, but there is no one on Russell Wilson's level. He is a top three NFL quarterback in my mind. I think that he is heavily underrated by just about everyone. I don't know if he'll. This is a kind of interesting question to ask. Do you think with the current style he plays, though, he'll ever win MVP? I kind of, unless they start throwing the ball more, I really don't see it. Like, you look at that playoff game especially, and they didn't let their number one offensive weapon do what he's best at, which is throw the football.
It's weird though because efficiency is definitely a thing. I mean, last year, what he had like 32 touchdowns and three interceptions or something. His
Yeah,
completion
that's
percentage
crazy
is
number.
perfect, pretty much. I mean, he had a perfect passer rating when targeting Tyler Lockett. He's not getting many opportunities, but when he does get an opportunity, he makes the most of it. I was there in Detroit when he has had his perfect passer rating day. You're right though, maybe. He won't because he's probably going to hover around 4,000 passing yards this year. He's never going to have 50 touchdowns like Patrick Mahomes did last year. And I don't know. I think he really could have won it 2 years ago when, if he would have gotten that team to the playoffs that barely missed the playoffs. But that was a different team. Also, Brian Schottenheimer, I think, is on more of a hot seat than maybe the public might think. I don't know. We can talk about that a little bit later, though.
All right. Well, that sounds good to me. We'll get deeper into the Seahawks and the wide receiving core because I have some points on them. But as far as the other quarterbacks go in this division, we might as well give them a little bit of a do. I'm curious because I've heard the most polarizing quarterback here, I think, is Kyler Murray, obviously.
I
What
disagree.
would you say it's Goff?
No, I would say it's Jimmy G.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a fair point. We've never really seen anything from him, but he's also put up decent film at points. I
At
don't know.
points,
I
but he
used
didn't
to be.
last year, and he was kind of playing par with Nick Mullins. I think Nick Mullins came in and had better games than Jimmy G last year in the same offense, so.
Yeah, it's kind of under the radar that he was very mediocre when he was healthy last year. I
The
would
last two
agree with
years.
that.
I mean, remember how long ago it
When he
seems that.
came in, I will say this. When he came in, when he got traded and he played that last 5 week stretch or whatever, that was the best football he played for San Francisco.
Oh, for San Francisco, for sure, yeah. But
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like forever ago when Belichick was, being raked through the coals and the Patriots dynasty was over because they traded away Jimmy Jean. It's like. Yeah, he had, like, we're giving him. I remember he had that one game where he came in. It wasn't his first start, but it was his first San Francisco action against the Seahawks, and everybody wanted to pin a rose on his nose because he went for that touchdown in the fourth quarter that meant nothing in garbage time. He had a few good games. They played spoiler a little bit, and everybody thought, like, oh, man, like, if they should fix the playoff rules. Not that a lot of people said this, but people did say stuff about the playoff rules, like, oh, this is the hottest team. They should throw in one hot random team. Maybe it was mostly Bill Simmons. My point is that I think everybody has this image of who Jimmy G is based on, I don't know, his good looks, him dating porn stars, him being, like, the perfect, like, idea of a quarterback, but I don't think he's really shown that on the field. And I don't know. If I'm ranking quarterbacks right now, he'd be a solid third. With Kyler Murray just being a question mark and not really in the rankings.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a Fair point. So you, pardon me. So you view Kyler Murray as a question mark. What do you kind of foresee? I have been kind of on the record as I think this grand experiment that they're trying is going to be gangbusters through about the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season, and then teams are really going to figure it out probably in November and down the stretch. But I think he's going to be pretty good throughout at least the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. When I think about running quarterbacks, I think about offensive lines. Like, I think one of the reasons that Baltimore is going to have a good year running with Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram is because of their offensive line. It's another reason why I think the Rams' offense works is kind of why I don't think Todd Gurley is the end-all be-all, and I think he can plug a lot of players in and they would have the same amount of success is because of the offensive line. We saw Josh Rosen just get tattered and beat behind that offensive line last year, and that offensive line was so bad that it really made David Johnson look mortal, and we've seen what he can be in the past. So I'm waiting for preseason action to, and even then I'm not sure if I'll be ready to have a hot take either way, but I really want to see how David Johnson's gonna be used in this offense now that it's Cliff's show there. But I think David Johnson will be Kyler Murray's best friend, and like doing the read option stuff is the way that this offense needs to go and for it to pop.
What kind of Jared Goff are we going to see this year? Early, like up to November Jared Goff or after November Jared Goff?
Wait, can you refresh my memory? When did Cooper Kupp go down?
He went down about November, about like the beginning of November.
I don't think that – I'm not saying like Cooper Kupp is like a number one draft pick in fantasy or whatever, but what I am saying is I do think there are sometimes these guys that maybe it doesn't even show up in this stat sheet, but I don't know. It seems like they're bros and it seems like they hang out, and I think – with Cooper Kupp on the field, and I'm a huge Cooks fan. I think Brandon Cooks is amazing. I think that because I don't think Jared Goff cares that much in a good way. You know, kind of like Eli Manning. Like it's kind of like, oh yeah, I lost the Super Bowl, whatever. Like I think that we will get the first half of the season or first three quarters of the season Jared Goff to start off the year this year.
All right.
Also, the Sean McVay factor is so huge because it's hard to divorce the two in my mind because, you know, we saw what Jared Goff was with Jeff Fisher and that was whatever. But I don't think Sean McVay has been overestimated or been overdubbed the genius there or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I really think, especially because it's kind of like Andy Reid's offenses. You know how Andy Reid always has like this new kind of wrinkle in the first couple weeks of the season, and then the rest of the league plays catch up, and by like October, the rest of the league is running like these pitch plays that it was. Remember last year's the little pitch plays, and like the wide receiver would run, and like it would be count as a pass, but really the ball would move like 6 inches. I think if you give Sean McVay an entire offseason, he'll come up with some new concepts, and I think Jared Goff will hit the ground running.
Alrighty. All right. So I will go with wide receiver core now. And this is kind of how we'll do it with the rest of the position groups, just so you know. I'll go with the Rams. I think they have the best group in the division with Cooper Kupp coming back and with Brandon Cooks there, obviously, Robert Woods. They've got some decent guys that stepped up in terms of depth last year for them, and I think they've got decent depth, and they've got kind of the three stable wide receivers that they need there. A guy I'm really looking forward to watching more of too is Josh Reynolds, who had a really good season when he was forced to come in. He's going to take a back seat and kind of be a fourth guy, but that's still a pretty dangerous wide receiving core, and Tyler Higbee, kind of an underrated tight end in my opinion. Better at run blocking than catching, but I think he can bring something to the passing game.
Yeah, Robert Woods is great. I would agree with you. If I were to play devil's advocate, I would say, what if DK Metcalf came out and was the real deal as a rookie?
No, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm sorry. That is... the reason I don't, I will be wrong on this. I 100% will be wrong on this, Janders. The reason I don't think the Seattle Seahawks are a playoff team is I don't trust the wide receiver core. Like, I like Tyler Lockett. I don't know what DK Metcalf's going to be. And then outside of that, I'm not uber familiar with any of the names I read when I was doing research on their roster. Like,
Well,
I
Jerron
don't.
Brown, it can was always a solid wide receiver for the Cardinals and then the Seahawks now. And I don't know, man. I more had the case of the drops last year, but he was a great player. I think they need to
He had
convert CJ
stretch.
Procise to a wide receiver, get him out of the running backs room, convert him to wide receiver. And Dickerson was fine last year as a tight end. I thought he would do more.
Yeah, Davis Moore, I mean,
David
sorry. Yeah,
Moore. Yep.
David Moore had stretches last year. He's very like feast or famine though. Either 'cause what weren't there games where he caught like three touchdown passes and then he'd just like disappear for 2 weeks?
I don't remember that. I remember he had a few drops though.
Okay. I
If
just
we're
remember
including
him.
tight ends in this, I just want to make a quick mention of George Kittle. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't name George Kittle.
Yeah.
I obviously we're not going to say that wide receiver group is, in contention for this, but I think George Kittle is somebody to just say his name right now.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy Dante Pettis. I mean, he had some flashes last year. I'd like to see it again. And this Debo Samuels guy, I don't know if he's going to be anything for that offense or not. But the San Francisco, I would say, has just as many question marks as Seattle does as far as wide receiving rooms go.
And for
But
Arizona, Christian Kirk needs to take the next step. That never really happened last year. And Larry Fitzgerald, another year older, we all, admire him. But like, I don't know, how old is he now? 35.
yeah, I'm intrigued by that Cardinals receiver core. I'll be honest with you. Andy Isabella, I don't know. I just feel like he was so fast throughout the whole scouting process and things like that. And I don't watch a ton of college football. I've admitted to that, but people seem to love him. And then the other guy to watch there is Keyshawn Johnson, who's kind of this sixth round guy that's coming out, but he was really good in college as well. They have Their wide receiving core reminds me a lot of Baltimore's in that it's very fast and young and built to kind of run by you rather than be big and physical. But I think if it is on paper, the wide receiving core is an air raid wide receiving core. And in an air raid offense, I think that might be kind of interesting to watch. So I think Arizona's a really, to me, Arizona in general is just a super intriguing team to kind of follow throughout the first 3 weeks of the season or so.
I'm not interested in them yet, but that could change in the next month.
I don't know. I'm excited to see. I think you didn't mention Kyler Murray's arm, but he's got a good arm. I watched some of his games at Oklahoma, and he has just as good an arm as Patrick Mahomes. Like he has a solid
That's high
arm.
praise, man.
He has a solid arm. I think I don't. I just think that he's kind of like a smaller framed Mahomes, I think, but. I don't know if he'll do what Mahomes did, but his playing style at first glance kind of reminds me of that, basically. Running backs rooms. We'll let you give you a shot at this.
Do I have to say it, man?
Yeah, I think it's Seattle.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you know how I feel about Chris Carson. If anybody's unacquainted with my feelings towards Chris Carson, I fell in love with him the first second I saw him. His power, balance, and speed, his explosion, is all stuff that I want out of a wide receiver. He could also catch balls out of the backfield. Rashard Penny was drafted in the first round after Chris Carson broke his leg, being an undrafted guy. It's time for him to take a step forward. JD McKissic, he is as fast as anybody in the NFL, I think. And there's just a couple times a year where he gets those matchups and he makes the defensive back or linebacker that's lined up on him look foolish. CJ Procise, I was a big fan of him in Notre Dame. He hasn't really made it happen in the NFL yet. But like I said, I think if he converts to a wide receiver, he'll really have an impact on this team. And Bo Scarborough was a guy that really popped last year in the preseason for the Cowboys. And I'm interested. So that's what I'm going to say.
I agree with that. We talked about Bo Scarborough actually on the NFC East podcast after he left. It's good to see that he kind of found a home in Seattle. Let me make a devil's advocate that Please. San Francisco is just as good. I think Matt Breida is probably, when healthy, is one of the most underrated and kind of slept on running backs in the league.
Good point,
If Jerick McKinnon can come back from injury, I think he can be a valuable passing target out of the backfield. And then, of course, you got to go with you add Tevin Coleman. And I love Tevin Coleman. He was great in Atlanta. I think that San Francisco, I view San Francisco and Seattle equally as far as if I could give it a tie, I'd say both of them. But I'd say the tie goes to Seattle.
Okay, but, yeah, that's fair.
I think San Francisco has just as good a backfield. And you could honestly make a case for Arizona as well. Chase Edmonds looked good last year.
David Johnson is such a wild card, though.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to – I was the biggest David Johnson advocate there was his first few years, but then last year just took a dirt nap, so I don't know.
Yeah, if he returns to what he was those first 2 years – and Chase Edmonds is still the guy that he was last year. Because in many ways, and this might be a hot take, Chase Edmonds played better than David Johnson at points last year. Ran much better. I don't know why. I think David Johnson is very O-line reliant, and Chase Edmonds is not. So, again, that O-line...
Yeah, and you say O-line reliant, which is what I want to get back to my Rams point of. I think the O-line there is just amazing, and that's the reason why Todd Gurley has had most of his success. Also, if we're saying that the Cardinals, the 49ers, and the Seahawks all have kind of similar backfields, well, you would have to give the edge to the Seahawks and the Cardinals because of who's playing quarterback.
I wouldn't put Arizona in the echelon with San Francisco and Seattle because both those teams have a third option. Mm-hmm. But I would say Arizona and LA, for that matter, can't be slept on. I'm blanking. Did they bring someone in to back up Gurley?
Yeah, they drafted his name's escaping me right now.
Let me pull up the roster really quick.
Yeah, they... Malcolm.
They drafted
Daryl Henderson.
Daryl Henderson. Oh, they have Malcolm Brown.
He played good last year. He got injured. I don't know.
I like Malcolm Brown. All right, let's talk about offensive line, and I think we both agree it's for Rams. Let me make a pitch to you on a different team, though. I think the Cardinals line got much, much better. They went out and improved this offseason. They added Marcus Gilbert at tackle, and they added J.R. Sweezy. I just think that
– Sweezy is a good player.
I think that the Cardinals' offensive line might be not great, but I don't think they are going to be – it cannot be understated how terrible they were last year. Honestly, one of the worst offensive lines I have ever seen play football. Ever.
That's fair. I think they've made improvements, but I still think they. I think Seattle's offensive line is sneaky, okay to good.
Yeah, they improved a lot last year.
Yeah. So I think maybe Arizona would still be behind. I don't know. I don't know much. Because I love Joe Staley for the 49ers, but I don't know about that unit. And honestly, talking about the offensive line is a little bit out of my depth, but I will say that it's a clear-cut winner that it's the Rams.
Yeah, Rams got it.
Yeah.
All right. Defensive line. All right. I'll let you go. You take this one.
Okay. It's tempting to take the 49ers with DeForest Buckner and Dee Ford, but you got Aaron Donald. You have no problem, right? It's the Rams.
Mm. Yeah, it's hard to argue.
I mean, well, like, all I'm saying is, like, what if you do have you Aaron think? Donald and Brockers, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you have a fair point.
Those two equal the, you know, Dee Ford and Buckner. I mean, just because, like, one's a little top-heavy doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think the 49ers and Rams are interesting. I see them kind of, like, If you listened to the last episode, we talked about the NFC East defensive line. And we actually came out of there saying that the Redskins' defensive line, with the upside it has, beats out the Eagles, even though I'd still say the Eagles have a better line. I think this is kind of one of those situations as well. I'd say the 49ers line has the most upside because I think Nick Bosa is going to be...
Yeah, that's a great point.
Insanely good, mm-hmm. like better than his brother. Like he was... It kind of got lost in the scramble of Kyler Murray, but he was the hands-down best player in this draft, according to basically everyone. And he ended up going to the 49ers. And I don't know. I like Eric Armstead as well. I thought he showed real improvement last year. I'm not going to argue with Aaron Donald, though. You make a good point. Aaron Donald's kind of a trump card. You can't go against the line that has he and Michael Brockers on it, even though I think losing Sue hurts them in covering the run.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Just a real quick note. It's going to be weird to see Terrell Suggs in a Cardinals jersey this year. That's going to be... I don't like that.
Why don't we get to that? Linebackers. I'm going to say the Seahawks. I don't think it's particularly...
Excuse me. Let's all cough and sneeze. Yeah, when I was doing this individually, I had KJ Wright and obviously Bobby Wagner in as two of my three linebackers. I don't think it's really close. I also had Jordan Hicks, but I think when you have a Hall of Famer at middle linebacker like the Seattle Seahawks do, you're going to win this every time.
By the way, covering some news, he just got paid. Props to the Seahawks. They don't get enough credit for being like just one of the most consistent franchises in the NFL. You can't, I don't think you can call them the Patriots because obviously not.
But obviously, I think the difference, I don't know if it's consistency, it's that there's a clear plan and that you can see that nothing happens by accident and they always have a plan. Also, when something in their plan backfires and doesn't work, they quickly realize that the plan isn't going quite as it should be, and they make a new plan. Like Tyler Lockett, they quickly got out of that. They've quickly gotten out of some other things, but it's like they have a clear plan, and then they will get out of it.
They wait. Hold on. Pardon me. This shows so much ignorance. If I did not know this, they got out of Tyler Lockett. I believe.
I don't know why I said Tyler Lockett. I meant to say Percy Harvin.
I was like, what am I missing? I thought he was still on the team.
No, yeah. I don't know what that was.
All right. Well, thank God. I did not really think that would have been a massive gap.
That would have been like a weird tweet storm that we both would have got.
Yes. I would make a case that Arizona's linebacking core looks interesting. And I also really like what the 49ers did adding Quan Alexander, obviously you can't go against Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, who are two of the best linebackers at their positions.
Yeah. That's all I got.
All right. Secondary. I'll let you hit this one.
This was a real hodgepodge because when I was doing it like an all-star team, I had Sherman, Aqib Talib, Pat Peterson, Eric Weddle, Bradley McDougal. I think the Rams have the best secondary. My voice goes up like that. John Johnson, the third, is really good.
Jim, I don't know.
Eric Weddle is really good. Aqib Talib is really good. Does
Eric Weddle still have it? I'm worried that the Ravens saw the writing on the wall and let him go.
I don't know. Well, who would you say? Because I'm not sure. Because I'm not a big fan of DJ Swearinger. Patrick Peterson's good. I don't know. I have a hard time picking. This is
I go with your team. I go with the Seattle Seahawks. I like Trey Flowers has moments of weakness, but I like him overall.
Yeah.
I like Bradley McDougal, and I love Shaquille Griffin. I think he's an incredibly underrated talent. And, I mean, Delano Hill, I didn't watch a ton of him last year. He's meh, but I think there are more questions in other secondaries. There is no dominant secondary, you're right, in this division. It's a hodgepodge of stars kind of all over the place. You could make an argument for Arizona, maybe, because they have Buda Baker as well, and I think he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It is a tough one to pick, but I go with the Seahawks just because consistently they are yeah. well. I give them the edge as far as coaching goes as well. I think yeah. they have the best coach secondary.
That's a good point. Sherman underrated last year, but we'll see if he has another good year back-to-back with 49ers.
Really? I thought he was mediocre down the stretch.
All right, man. I don't think anybody talked about him. I think he did a great job.
By the way, let's touch on Allen Robinson for a second. I watched the Allen Robinson game. I can see where you're coming from. He was dominant in that game.
I'm just saying, he does 16 weeks of that. He is fantasy wide receiver number one. No question. Yeah. Not one.
He
top
was
five.
Pretty great. And it's also underrated how different Mitch Trubisky looked from the first half of that game to the second half.
Oh,
the first
time,
half,
yeah.
he was terrible. And the second half, he looked like what Bears fans praise in Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, but also it's like, I think we sometimes like will be like, oh, well, that's what he's going to look like in the playoffs. It's like, Mitch Trubisky's a real dude who was playing in his first playoff game. Like, yeah, he looked like shit the first half. Like, let him be.
That's a fair point. All right, some general questions now that we've kind of... Do you like that format, by the way? I'm asking this of all my guests. Do you think that covers a lot?
Yeah, I would have included tight ends, but yeah, I think it's good.
See, that's a good point. I view wide receivers as tight ends.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I don't think George Kittle would have tipped the scales for the 49ers, but I just thought it was important that we said his name.
Yes, of course. He is quite good. As far as weaknesses go in these position groups, is there anything – I'm not actually super concerned about any groups except for two on the Seahawks.
The defensive line and what?
Yeah, I'm concerned by the defensive line and the wide receivers, yeah. But the defensive line, especially after the Jerron Reed suspension, is so thin. I get that they find these diamonds in the rough, but who's
going... I'm surprised they didn't find Mike Daniels. Like, they didn't pick up Mike Daniels after the Packers cut him. I thought for sure that was going to happen.
That could still happen.
I thought he signed with the Lions.
He hasn't... I don't think he's signed yet.
I've gotten some bad information.
I think he might have been visiting the Lions. Let me double check. Oh, no, you're right. He did sign with the Lions. I missed that. That's on me. Mike Daniels would have made sense there. Who's the guy, who's the kind of sleeper guy that only hardcore Seattle Seahawks fans know who might step up?
It might have been a guy that you name-dropped early in the show. I think Trey Flowers is really a guy to look out for. But other than that, I'm not sure.
I meant on the defensive line.
On the defensive line? Oh, I have no clue. It's a mess. I have no faith in that unit. I got nothing.
Oh. Yikes. Yeah. I thought you might have some optimism about that. Okay, so obviously, revisiting the wide receiver core for the Seahawks, you obviously kind of like it more than I do. So let me ask you, outside of Tyler Lockett, oh, I guess you said Jerron Brown, that's a guy to watch, and David Moore. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see it first.
But also, Metcalf is a completely wild card. We have no idea. And if he can contribute and play underneath and Lockett can play above...
Why is he such a wild card? I can't think of a player that's had more...
I don't know. I also don't cover college football like you said you don't, and it seems like the narrative of him is two completely different stories, and as a Seahawks fan, I'm hoping for the good story. So, I mean, I have no clue. But if he could play underneath, but he could play over the top, too. I don't know. This might be a run-and-gun offense. Like, what if the Seahawks were just throwing 40 times a game?
I would have a hard time seeing that. Who would, I guess.
They're not going to be able to stop the run. They're going to have to play offense to complement their defense. It's a team game. Like, if you don't have a defensive
line.
Well,
I'd say they want to run the ball more. Because wouldn't you want to kill clock?
I don't think so. Because if you need to go
keep
and
the
score,
defense off the field. It makes more sense for them to be a running team. in my opinion.
Because
you kill
in
clock
theory,
and you
it
keep the
makes
weak
sense to
defensive
go out
line
and run the
field.
ball and kill the clock, but not in practice when you have a top three quarterback. You could play
That's a fair
ball
point.
control with Russell Wilson probably easier than you can with running the ball.
Well, I'd argue that is what they do every year, so what, I don't think they'd change it. The whole Doug Baldwin scenario, that really confused me and really made me kind of sad. What kind of health problem forced him out of the league?
Wasn't it a knee?
I thought it was something a little bit more serious. I thought it might have been like a heart or something like that. I was shocked when that news came across because I had heard nothing about it until it came out.
Yeah, man, he was battling injuries forever, and I think it just got to a point where his body wasn't holding up.
That is underrated, like probably one of the biggest losses in the entire NFL, outside of maybe Gronk with the Patriots. Like,
well,
people.
Gronk's coming back, but yeah. Doug Baldwin had always had the mind meld with Russell Wilson and watching them
Yeah, he
play
was
together.
so good on, like, one of the most underrated wide receivers out here. All right, let's get to some questions and then get out of here. What storyline are you most excited to see in this division this year?
I guess it's Kyler Murray. I don't know. It'll be interesting. It's always interesting to see a young guy. Also, I want to see what happens to Todd Gurley this year, kind of from like a negative standpoint. Like, I kind of want, you know, like as a Seahawks fan, I don't want to see him do well. Also, Jimmy Garoppolo, it's kind of a sink or swim year. That's also up there. But I don't know, dude. I don't want to see any of those guys do well. I just want to see my Seahawks win. But if I was being objective, I think the most interesting football one is Jimmy Garoppolo sinking or swimming this year. Because this is the year, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Who's getting fired in this division?
Can you see Brian Schottenheimer getting fired at the end of the year? Because
That's
if you
going
look at
deep.
If you go around the rest of the league, Cliff, they're not going to want to done two coaches in a year or two coaches in a year in Arizona, right? So Cliff.
No,
is
I
safe.
think Keim goes before Kingsbury goes.
Ooh, Keim is an interesting one. Yeah. Huh.
I think GMs in this division are on a hot seat. The bottom GMs, Lynch and Keim, are two guys I could see being fired if things
go
south.
Schneider and Snead definitely aren't going anywhere.
Right,
but I
Snead
can see...
and McVay just got extended. So
yeah.
They're definitely not going anywhere.
I could see, yeah, the GMs. I wasn't thinking about the GMs for some reason, but I could definitely see Keim and Lynch both getting shown the door. Lynch has that, what, he's on year two of a six-year contract?
I'm pretty sure this is year three.
Year three?
I think so. I think he's been there 3 years because I think he was there. Didn't they bring
this
in?
This would be, yeah. This would be, yeah. They brought him at the same time. They both have 6 year deals, right? So this would be year three of both their deal. Yeah. So Keim or Lynch? Yeah. I would say probably more likely Keim. But Lynch is on the hot seat too.
I'm going to go with Lynch just because I think the 49ers finish worse. I think this division's going to be insanely competitive and, like, very, very close except for one team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really competitive between two teams, for sure. Mm. I don't know. What you think the Cardinals are going to sneak in and be a part
of
this?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of buying into the Cardinals not being a playoff team but being better than terrible. If that makes any sense.
I guess so. Because they can kind of, if they can kind of pick off the Rams and the Seahawks once each or one of those teams twice, yeah, it throws a monkey wrench in the whole thing.
Hot take for the division. Anything?
Seattle Seahawks win.
I wouldn't say that's a hot take. I think.
No. It was a hot take last year. Hot take. I don't think I have one. And I know I saw these notes beforehand. I'm being a bad podcast guest.
No, it's okay. Sometimes there's no hot take, and why force it?
I also just don't want to go around, because I was thinking about this earlier about how I kind of regret being one of the people that said Peyton Manning was done the year that he won the Super Bowl. Although, like, his arm was kind of shot, but, like, he still won the Super Bowl. And I just don't want to be – I'd rather be uplifting in my life and in my reporting. So it's – I don't know. And if I don't see anything, I don't want to just say stuff to say it.
So this will lead into kind of record predictions for each of the teams, but my hot take would be, and you tell me if this is completely crazy, I think the Cardinals finish 8-8. I think they finish with an even record. I don't think they're going to have a winning record, but I don't think they're going to have a losing record. I think 8-8's just right.
I just said I want to be positive and all that, but I think they're a year away.
I
Yeah, I
mean,
don't
that's a
know.
fair point. It usually does take about a year for offenses to gel and things like that. All right, so for me, I have, like I said, I think the
Can I tell
division's
you that here's the Cardinals' problem, is that they're playing the Rams and the Seahawks twice. They're playing the Steelers, the Browns, and the Ravens, and they're also playing.
the NFC South, which is tough.
Yeah, so there you have the Panthers, the Saints, and the Falcons, and the Bucks. And the Bucks game is huge because they're going against Bruce Arians, and I
See,
don't
I'm
know.
of the opinion though, and maybe this is the hotter take, I think they start 5-0. I don't like the Lions. I think they can surprise the Ravens. I think both of those teams have similar styles, and I think the Cardinals
Ravens
can.
is a road game, though.
I still buy them. I think
Okay.
Cam's not going to be healthy week three or fully there. I think they beat the Seahawks while they're at home, and then I think the Bengals stand no chance of winning more than two games this year.
And then Matt Ryan and Julio Jones drop the hammer on him. And then they
Yes,
play the Giants,
basically.
and who says they can't beat the Giants? Then they play the Saints. I don't know, man. I disagree with you, but that's fine.
That's fine. All right, so for me, it's really tight. I think I have Rams going 9-7 just because I think Jared Goff's going to struggle to start the year, and I don't think the offense is going to get. I think there's going to be a Super Bowl hangover, more or less, for them throughout the first part of the season, and then I think the second half they'll turn it on. I think the Seahawks go 8-8, though I fully admit I'm definitely wrong on that. They will definitely somehow
Well,
squeak
then
into
why say it?
the
I'm very confused. This is the second time in this
playoffs.
podcast you said that. I don't understand I'm
Well,
definitely wrong. Like, if you have a take, it's like if you have a take, spit it out, man. You don't have to say that you're wrong. Just say it.
I think their schedule's too tough. I see them losing to the Saints. I see them losing to the Cardinals at home. I see them losing to the Browns, losing to the Ravens, losing to the Falcons, splitting with the 49ers. I don't have them winning a division series. I think they split with everyone in the division.
Wow. Well, I think they beat the Bengals, the Steelers, the Saints, the Cardinals, and then.
I'd agree with the Bengals and the Steelers. I don't see how they beat the
Honestly, I
Saints.
want to be surprised because they have the Rams at home and then go to Cleveland. I want to be surprised if Cleveland is the first game they lose. They go
I mean,
5-1 through the first 6 weeks, and their only loss is to the Browns.
that's a fair point. I guess but where they get beat up for me is I think the division's going to be really competitive. That's why I'm not wrong. I think they're going to split everywhere in the division. I think most of the division is going to split their games.
All
I
right.
don't think.
Well, you could just say that they're all going to. That would make math sense.
I think I have. That might actually be what I have here on my spreadsheet.
I think it's a race to 11 wins. If the Rams can get to 11 wins, they win the NFC West. If the Seahawks can win 11 games, they win the NFC West. I think it's whoever can win 11 games.
It's a fair point. And then I have the 49ers at 6-10. I'm kind of out on Jimmy G.
Yeah, me too. I don't even know what I would have them as. Probably 6-10 might be a little bit better than what I would have them as.
So you think it's the Seahawks, the Rams, the Cardinals, the Niners?
Yeah. I don't know.
All
I'm
right.
really not. Yeah.
I am willing to admit being wrong on this division all the time because every single year I pick this division, and this is by far the division I get wrong the most.
All right.
I
Yeah,
don't
I
know.
don't know.
I don't know why, but it just is the way it is. Anything else we need to cover before we get out of here?
I don't think so. Forecast thinking audio content is coming back. We took the summer off. It's coming back. Football content, blah blah blah. At Chandra's FPT. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think that's gonna be a wrap. Thanks for so much for coming on, Jonders. It's
Thank you so
always
much for having me, Eric.
a ton of fun. And we will be back we'll have this episode up today, Monday night, and then tomorrow we'll talk about the NFC North. So tune in for that. Thank you very much, everybody. Peace out.
Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.